The Dory Monson Show on Cairo Radio. This is The Big Lead.
David Bowes in for Dory Monson here on 97.3 Cairo FM. I have raided the Diet Coke from his fridge, and I'm ready to roll with the big show. Today, we're going to talk about some bias that has been more prevalent than one might expect, but it's being exposed now thanks in a one positive after effect of the COVID-19 shutdown, which is people are doing things virtually, which means there's a lot of people getting video doing the things they would ordinarily do in the quiet privacy of their buildings, particularly when it comes to schools. And that's what brings us to the big lead.
The big lead, Bizarro World.
Jason Rance from sister station KTTH joins us now. Jason, you've uncovered yet another teacher caught on tape.
Oh, yes.
Describing this time peace as a racist concept.
It is so rather bizarre in this case. Suzanne Wakefield is an art teacher over at Seattle's Tops K through 8. It's actually just a few blocks from us here in Eastlake. And one of her eighth grade students was essentially sick and tired of her constantly saying that pretty much everything is racist. So she started to film some of the lectures or monologues as the teacher kept continuing to do it. And apparently peace is racist. So Mrs. Wakefield gives an assignment to essentially draw something on the theme of peace. But it might have been just filled with bigotry.
I wanted you guys to know that I might give you guys things sometimes that might be kind of racist. You know, and I'm admitting it. And I want to talk about it sometimes because it infiltrates every part of our life.
And David, she literally wanted to talk about this a lot because, you know, I looked at the assignment and I'm trying to figure out how any reasonable person could call this racist in any way. And no reasonable person could call it racist. So to understand where she's coming from, I pulled a slightly longer clip from this lecture because she just gives this like meandering, nearly incoherent sort of stream of consciousness. And it does explain where she's coming from. Apparently, it's because she has white privilege, and the way she views peace might be different than someone who's oppressed.
My perspective is coming from a white privilege. I'm a white person, and I've been conditioned, and I'm trying to uncondition myself. But I just wanted you guys to know that, you know, if you believe in peace, it could mean lots of different things. But I also believe that peace is really not possible without equality and justice. And that's why, you know, you could have a peaceful protest and try to protest what's going on in the world. But how can you feel peace when you're a group from a minority or something that's been oppressed and does not have the same privileges as white people do, you know? And so when I come across as, you know, I don't really believe that peace is possible personally unless we have equal justice first. And that's a fight that's going on, and it's been going on for a long time.
So it goes on and on and on. All of which, by the way, is available in video form at mynorthwest.com.
I was disturbed by a couple of things. One was, you know, and we just heard at the top of the hour, somebody was slapping swastika stickers on businesses in Bellingham. Now, I don't know if that's a false flag operation or if it's a bunch of white supremacist nut jobs. But, you know, if you're of the mindset of this art teacher and you're basically suffering a post-traumatic stress disorder or something because you're thinking that absolutely everything that you do or say or think mm-hmm. is racist, and she thinks the peace symbol's racist. Imagine her walking through Bellingham and seeing the tie-dyed peace shirts and give peace a chance bumper stickers there, because they are everywhere, you know, in Bellingham, and not knowing the difference, mm-hmm. not being able to see the difference between peace and the other stuff. Also, at what point in the world, in the history of mankind, would we be able to say that there was peace if there was no peace, unless absolutely no one was oppressed in any way? I mean, that is a utopia. I'd love to see it happen in this world, but I'm a realist.
It's never happened.
Human nature is not the kind.
No, even when we had that utopia, we still had the Morlocks, okay? So let's stop pretending
exactly.
that world actually exists. And, you know, to the point of what happened in Bellingham, just, you know, let's take it for what it is. It was a swastika that was posted on a business's wall. That should not be viewed the same way as talking about peace. It's they're not on the same
level. Or an art assignment about paintings.
Yeah, but that's my point is that there is no distinction to be made between what is actual bigotry, what is actual racism, what is actual hatred, and this kind of nonsense where we're trying to parse words because we want to make sure that we're woke enough. And for me, as I covered the story, and I again, there's a lot more audio and video that you can see at MyNorthwest.com. I felt sorry for her because she has convinced herself that she is a racist when she's not. She's just a sap in this case.
I agree. I when I watched the video last night from your post there at MyNorthwest.com, I felt like this was kind of the modern super woke equivalent of those medieval monks that would self-flagellate and start whipping themselves on the back. I mean, she's so depressed about what's going on. She's thinking that she's been this horrible person. And I like how your post, you keep pointing out, you know, these assignments are not actually racist. She has not actually said these racist things, but she's the one who keeps wondering it. The other thing that bothered me wasn't just the overt political messaging that she's pushing on the kids here, but it's also the lack of lesson plan. I mean, this is a meandering, incoherent. She doesn't even do a good job relaying what her political or philosophical beliefs are here. And it's supposed to be an art class, you know, and you start to wonder what's going on and why are we paying so much for this if that's all we can get? Because there are lesson plans for art that are available online. You know, there's courses that have been pre-made and professionally produced that might actually give kids a leg up on the
society
rather than what I'm seeing here.
Yeah. And, you know, there's another portion. Let me play a brief clip where she does get more overtly political, although she, like so many other teachers I've noticed in the stories that I've been researching, they refuse to say Donald Trump's name. They'll just say him or that individual. She also got into it about Trump.
Our country is divided. Our leader is pushing that. He's not an advocate for peace. Our leader, or unity, like Obama was. No, unity keeps people coming together, which is really hard to do because there's so many equality issues and injustice happening that people are fighting against.
Yeah, so in the administration that has been able to broker historic peace deals in the Middle East, he is not interested in peace. He is only interested in division, unlike Obama, who is that's the saint. It's just appropriate for an art class.
I thought the same thing. I thought that, well, first of all, yeah, she's dipped herself into current events and world affairs there for no apparent reason. And then there's this, I've seen both her and a couple of other very prominent Democrats make this criticism of Trump as well. And let's face it, you know, Trump likes his divisive qualities, but other politicians do. I mean, Obama had some opportunities for enormous opportunities, I think, for unification. And instead, he did some division as well because it was politically advantageous for him to do so. And I thought it was a huge missed opportunity. But when Obama does it, he does it with social grace and poetic language. When Trump does it, he's, you know, it's like Captain Caveman with a blunt instrument.
Yeah.
And yet, you know, we had if you're just looking at it, peace or war. And I remember people saying, good God, could we trust Trump with a nuclear trigger? He's going to get us in all kinds of wars. And Trump can legitimately say, actually, you know, we haven't gotten into any wars with him. And he's brokered some pretty big peace deals.
Yeah. Look, you can have the argument, right? The political argument. And both sides can make their points. And, you know, we can be civil and all that. Not in an art class with eighth graders. And that's where it's inappropriate. And before I leave you to the rest of your show, just very quickly, I added last night as I was posting this at MyNorthwest.com a section I don't normally do, which was simply explaining why I'm highlighting this, because I don't think she should be fired, nor do I think she should be disciplined. I think the school needs to talk to her and say, hey, why don't we withhold some of this stuff? But I have no interest in seeing her fired as a result of this. And so what is the point of stories like this? Because I've done this in the past. I'm going to continue to do this, including just later this week. And it's twofold. Number one, parents have to be more generally aware of the bias in the classroom so that you guys out there who are parents can have conversations with your kids so that they're not susceptible to some of this indoctrination, and so that they can talk to you about it when it's happening. But number two, it's also to get teachers more generally aware of how they're letting their political views and bias interfere with what should be the main goal of teaching kids, which is teaching kids how to express themselves rather than teaching kids what to say to express themselves. And to that end, I hope people join me in amplifying this story. Again, it's at mynorthwest.com, very easy to find. Post it on your Twitter feeds, post it on your Facebook walls, put them in the little groups that you have with other parents and with teachers, just to be more generally aware of what's going on so you can help push back.
Yeah, I'm curious. When you've been gathering up a lot of these teachers, are you putting them in any kind of order? Like in the top 10 list of most crazy bias teachers? Or are you just kind of doing it as they come? Because I'm curious if you've got a rank of a royalty, so to speak, of your top catches at this point.
I mean, I don't have a ranking yet. It's probably going to be more than 10. So we might have to go into top 100. But I tackle them based on the severity or what's going on in the news that day. Right. I mean, it's all completely different. When I've got stuff that I think is incredibly urgent to get out there right now, I'll go ahead and do that. We did that last week with the teacher out in Parkland. Later this week, I've got something probably coming up from Tacoma that's not as pressing because it didn't just happen this week. But when we have stuff that's immediate, certainly, you know, I'll attack it immediately over at mynorthwest.com. And of course, on my own show, which I don't know if we've plugged 14 times yet, but I'm on KTTH AM 770 weekday afternoons from 3 to 6.
Yeah, you got to have a shameless plug in there. I mean, that's the benefit
the
of
plug
on
that I'm on,
coming on the show.
AM 770 KTTH from 3 to 6 Monday
right.
through Friday.
Yeah. Well, Some FM listeners are like, wait, there's still AM? What?
There is, and good news.
You got to get my grandpa's car for that?
Yeah, if you live, by the way, in Bellevue and Mercer Island, you can listen on 94.5 FM. You could also listen on HD, Channel 3 on 97.3. And, of course, as you said, the app for when I'm on the air, 3 to 6, in case it wasn't clear to the audience, on KTTH weekdays.
Yeah, and let me tell you, I agree with you on the not firing. I'm not into the kind of super woke cancel culture where you fire everybody that you disagree with. I think, you know, one of the problems that we have right now is the lack of cultural glue. Like, we can be really divided in politics, but there used to be things that would unite us together, like sports. Well, you know, sports are now very controversial. We've got, you know, movies, and now you've got – that's why it would irritate people when – you know, actors or actresses would be speaking out too politically, because then the escapism becomes more grounding in reality. Mm-hmm. So that becomes a challenge for people. I think that's one of the reasons why award shows are kind of tanking, because, you know, people were tuning in for costumes, for pageantry, and for clips of their favorite shows. And instead, they're just kind of getting lectured, which they can get, you know, on 24/7 cable networks. And so, you know, even though I think that, you know, what this art teacher is doing was wrong, you know, I'm more concerned with, one, her lesson plans. I think that's an issue. But two, I'd assign her to watch maybe Prager University for a good 24-hour period so she could, you know, get a different perspective and maybe, you know, look in the mirror and not see a horrible oppressor all the time. That would be a plus. But also, I like the idea of giving parents choice. I don't want her fired, but I would like to see parents have more tools and have money directed directly to the parents so they can choose what kind of classes, and especially online classes, that their children take in this time when there's no schools open. I mean, obviously, you know, you want to keep your kids educated. And I'll tell you, I listened to this entire video that you have, which is pretty lengthy, and I didn't learn a doggone thing about art the entire time.
Well, and I'll say it, by the way, because you don't want to. You don't need to take art class online. Can we just stop this nonsense? I agree that art is important, blah, blah, blah. We're supposed to say that. Not right now. You don't need to take it online. Come on.
Well, there's master courses. What are those things called?
The master class.
I don't know. Yeah, master class. You could still do it. That's all I'm saying. There's art appreciation that you could take online. I mean, you
probably
could take
higher quality than what we're experiencing in this instance.
Yeah, symphony appreciation, any of these things. I'm sure we could come up with something, you know, call the Seattle Symphony, see what they've got available. But all I'm saying is that I'm watching this and I know for a fact that this is not the best you could get online to give your kids an art experience, an art appreciation experience or anything else. You know, I mean, for crying out loud, if she heard the song Give Peace a Chance, she might call 911.
Oh, my God. She quoted terrifying. She quotes Imagine by John Lennon, which is a horrible song that people pretend
horrible
is good.
Song.
It's a horrible,
horrible
song.
Horrible
song. It's not, oh, it's such a great song. It's John Lennon's bad. No, it's not. No, it's not.
No.
Stop this nonsense.
Stupid song.
Stupid, dumb
horrible.
Song.
Yeah. You can imagine everything that John Lennon says by just thinking of the Soviet Union. And, you know, you take a look at it. Turns out it didn't work out very well. Right.
I want to
imagine
a world
with no religion.
Yeah. I want to imagine a world in which that stupid song was never created or performed.
Yeah.
That's
well, there's a movie about
right there,
that. And there's a movie about that.
It's a good movie.
Didn't you see that?
Yeah.
You saw it?
Yes.
Yeah. It was a great film. I mean, I forget the name of it. But it's what was the name of that thing? It's a movie where the guy gets in an accident and he kind of wakes up in an alternate
universe. It was a movie
called Yesterday,
which is very good. Yeah. The only bad part about it is that the one guy who remembers the Beatles in this world in which they didn't exist remembers the Beatles in a world in which they didn't exist and actually continues to sing the song. It should have just been about how awesome it is that we don't have to be worried about the Beatles anymore.
Well, I didn't mind Twist and Shout. If you had just left Imagine out, we'd be safe. And that Cuckoo Kazoo, I Am the Walrus song, I can't take that one either. Hey, Jason Rantz, great to have you on the show. Good catch, as always. Thanks for being on the Dory Monson Show.
Thanks for having me.
You bet. David Bowe's filling in for Dory Monson here on 97.3 Cairo FM. David Bowe is in for Dory Monson here on 97.3 Cairo FM. Yesterday, there was two stories that I just found absolutely terrifying. One was this video of a guy who was out for a run, and he stumbles upon some cougar cubs, little, you know, kittens, and he's trying to get a closer shot. Very, very, very bad idea. And the mama cougar comes running out, and this cat is following him for, it looks like about a mile. I mean, it's a six-minute video. He's walking backwards. And the cat's just, you know, leaping at him, and it's ferocious and terrifying. And you think, what would be scarier than that? Well, then you read about a Bellevue man named Baron Lee who is going out to his car. He turns around. There's a guy with a mask on running toward him, shooting at him. And you just, you know, at that point, it would just be so terrifying. He ends up getting shot 9 times but surviving to tell the tale. And he joins us now. And thanks so much for making the time, Baron. It's great to have you on, and I'm so glad you're alive and able to talk to us.
Thank you. I appreciate that.
You know, first, start by telling us, you know, what happened when you walked out to your car. When did you first notice you were being attacked?
Well, I walked out to my car. I mean, and out of the blue, you know, I didn't see anyone at first. I just heard the first gunshot. You know, it was a few days after 4th of July, so initially, I thought it was a firework, someone, you know, setting off fireworks. Looked to my left, didn't see anyone. So I looked to my right. As I'm looking to my right, he fires the second shot. It hits me right in my right arm, dropped my keys, and I see him running towards me, continuing to fire. So first instinct was to try and get it, you know, undercover. So I had just unlocked my door, thankfully, and I ran for my car door to open it up and get in. And then I took a shot in the back of my leg. That made me fall to the ground, and they were still firing at me, so I got behind my car door, and they just kept going, and then a few seconds later, I see this person come around the door, standing over me at point-blank range, and fires the first shot, goes into my chest and out the side of it, and then, I instantly, I got to cover myself and protect myself as best as possible, and so all I could do was basically hide under the steering wheel. I thrust my body into the car and hit my head and chest under the steering wheel. But unfortunately, you know, my whole left side was exposed in my back. And so they unloaded the rest of the clip into my left leg, the hip, and the left arm as well, until they finally ran out of bullets.
That is just unbelievably terrifying. Could you see his eyes or any part of his face at any point?
You know, the the best glance I got of the person that was shooting me was when they were first running towards me. You know, when he came around the door, he had already fired. He didn't even look where he was firing. He just automatically shot, you know. And so I wasn't thinking about, hey, let me look at who this is. You know, the first thing was to protect my face and my head. I didn't want him to shoot at my face, you know. So that's why I turned around and threw myself in. So I didn't really even get a good look at the person at all. But even if I did, I wouldn't have known him, you know.
Yeah, yeah. Did it seem like it happened in an instant, or did time seem to slow down? I mean, what was going through your head at that time, if anything?
The only thing that felt, you know, the only time it felt like it was drawn out, even though it wasn't, was when he was at point blank range and I had my head under the steering column and he was firing the rest of the shots, just waiting for that last shot. Please, this be the last one. And, you know, he kept going. You know, that seemed like it was forever in retrospect of what I was going through at the time. But, yeah, it was all quick. I mean, the guy was in and out within probably a minute or if not less than that.
So did he run away, or didn't check to see if he had delivered some fatal blow?
After he fired the final shot, I saw him, I just saw the feet, and then it looked like he bent down to pick up some casings and then took off. As he did that, I fell to the ground and was on my back on the side of my car.
Did you call 911 or did someone call for you?
No. So shortly after that, I heard our neighbor call out at me and say, hey, are you okay? And I'm like, no, I've been shot a few times, several times. Please call 911. And then 2 seconds later, one of my neighbors, she showed up and she's like, hey, where are you shot? And I said, everywhere. And then she saw blood and she tried to apply pressure to my chest to keep the wound, keep me alive. And I just asked her to go into my apartment and get my fiance in the toilet where I live. It was right there. And so more neighbors showed up. And she never left me. She had somebody else go run and get him. And I guess a bunch of people called 911 at that time. So by the time, a few seconds later, the first responders that showed up was the police. The police were first on the scene. And then not even a couple minutes later, the paramedics showed up, fire and paramedics.
Now, it's been revealed since then that police suspect they've arrested two teenagers and your ex-wife is a conspiracy where, you know, she allegedly paid these two, one a getaway driver, 17-year-old, and another 17-year-old as a trigger man to attack you. Did you at any point suspect or did you have any idea when you were being attacked why you were being attacked or who might be doing it?
Oh yeah, without a doubt. I didn't even think twice. I'm just wondering, you know, who she got to do it. That's all. I never told the detective.
Wow. There,
I had zero doubt of who it was.
So why is that? I mean, a lot of people have, you know, divorces get, you know, ugly and people are angry with each other, you know, but this is a whole new level of strange. You know, what turned your wife, you know, I mean, what was she like before you got married? I mean, what attracted you to her to begin with if you at this point just thought, oh, yeah, no question, that's my wife was trying to kill me. What was she like before you got married, and when did the shift happen?
So, I mean, obviously there was a time that was good, and that's why I was with her. But the shift happened basically right before my son was born. And then shortly after that, that's when I discovered a lot of this. I told other news coverages, you know, everyone sees the shooting, but you guys don't realize this isn't something out of the blue that someone just turned and is disgruntled about the divorce and wants this. This has been going on for 5 years. You know, I filed two police reports on two occasions where she tried to run me over. But I also knew the reason why we separated in the first place. I already knew how bad she was, not only to myself, but to my son. Why I was leaving her was for the safety of my son in the first place. So, I mean, it wasn't a shock to me. I mean, and still, at the end of the day, I'm still, you know, I was dealing with this a lot longer than 3 months ago. You know what I mean? Everybody thinks, oh, you got shot. How do you deal with, you know, having my son go to visits on her every weekend? after the shooting. I'm like, it's no different than what I've been going through for the last 5 years. I couldn't tell this story. I couldn't tell anybody this. I mean, like I said, I would sound like a lunatic. No one would believe me anyway. I tried it many times to taper it down and tell the story, and I still wouldn't be listened to. The courts didn't listen. No one listened, you know? So
that's what I was wondering. I mean, with the other police reports then, do you feel like they weren't taken seriously? Man, I'm wondering now why she wasn't in jail before if she was trying to run you down.
Yeah, because everyone's saying, oh, you got to take care of it in family court. And family court's a joke. I mean, it's a circus that it's not set up to protect the kids. It's a money-making scheme for lawyers and the government, in my opinion, because there was lots of red flags that said that she was not suitable to be a mom, you know, let alone be alone with my son, you know. But it wasn't until later after the dependency where I went through 2 years of being under the magnifying glass the same way she had to be before they realized, you know, some of what I was saying must be true. I mean, there were people that started seeing it, but it took, you know, me jumping through hoops and hurdles to get anyone to even pay attention. So, you know, there's a few people that have been working on the dependency case. They're not even surprised today. They know that she was capable of it. But the way the system's set up, there's nothing we can do. You know, nothing I personally could have done to protect my son any better. So everything I did is calculated to come to this point in time. And my biggest relief is that my son's safe for now, you know.
Yeah. So you were basically putting yourself in, you know, in front of your son, trying to keep your son out of any dangerous situation, correct?
Correct. I mean, at the end of the day, like I said, I wasn't initially a target, but I knew, you know, the reason I was targeted is because I put myself in front of my son in custody. She had made comments to a friend or family member in text messages prior to us separating, saying, you know, the best thing that I could do was to just walk away and never come back for my own safety.
You have no idea how she contacted the 17-year-olds or who they are or allegedly contacted, I guess.
I have no idea who the connection is. And really, frankly, I don't care. I mean, as much as, you know, it was a horrific thing that the teenagers did, like I said, I don't blame them. It really is just a poor choice of judgment they had, the mistake, you know, and I feel bad for them. I honestly do. She's the culprit. She's the one that put them up to it, you know. And at the end of the day, you know, I hope, you know, they find a way to rehabilitate themselves and, you know, see the error of their ways and what they did. You know, they didn't know me. They didn't even know anything about my family or my kids or anything. And see what kind of potential they could have done to hurt my family permanently, you know. Thankfully, you know, I'm alive, you know, and then I won't have to live with the fact that they killed a father, you know what I mean? Somebody's father.
Yeah.
And they don't know the issues my son has to go through. My son has special needs. What would have happened to him if I wasn't here? You know?
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, I mean, I'm sure that's even more terrifying for you than anything else.
Say, I think it's irrelevant how she knows the kids and whatnot. At the end of the day, it's her that's the culprit for all of it.
Well, nine bullets, no organs, no arteries hit. I mean, you are a blessed man, sir. I'm just amazed, and I'm just happy for you.
It took a lot of things to come together for that to happen. I mean, that was a blessing in disguise. But with the first responders being there so quickly, and my neighbors and everyone responding so quickly to keep me awake and keep me conscious, that's why I live. I think if I had laid there longer, you know, I probably wouldn't be here talking to you.
Yeah, it's a scary thing. Well, Baron Lee, recover well, heal with your son, and at least, you know, that long nightmare you've been going through, as you put it, for 5 years is finally over, and you guys can be safe. So I'm thankful for that, and be well, sir. Thank you so much for joining the Dory Monson Show.
Yeah, tell Dory I said hello too. Thank you.
I sure will. Thanks, Baron.
Bye bye.
David Bose in for Dory Monson here on 97.3 Cairo FM. David Bowes in for Dory Monson here on 97.3 Cairo FM. Coming up at 1:30, we're going to speak with the Center for the Environment Director at Washington Policy Center, Todd Myers, about this new study that is kind of touting Seattle as a great green emerald jewel in the environmental movement. So the Emerald City gets credit again, making Portland jealous. But you know the story. What happens is they're getting a bunch of credit, not for things that they've accomplished, but for goals that they've set or lofty proclamations. And so what they've done is they've made this list of various metrics that they could assess which cities were the most environmental. And there's only a few that correspond to actual achievement. But because Seattle makes up for they're not weighed according to achievement, you know, because Seattle has all kinds of hot air coming from the politicians that claim to be doing all these kinds of wonderful things, they end up being ranked, well, you'll find out, but significantly high in the nation for their environmental awareness or wokeness and achievements, even though they haven't actually done anything. And it reminded me of, I was just going through some stories today, and I saw this little story, a little tidbit, didn't make any headlines or anything, but it's one of these kind of TMZ, are you aware of this celebrity going around? And you can tell it's a waning celebrity, true, but it's Arnold Schwarzenegger. And I had to do a double take because I thought, wait a second, is this an old picture or what's going on with this? Because remember back in, you know, when he was at his heyday, Schwarzenegger drive around in a Humvee, chew a cigar and just, you know, that was him. I mean, he didn't care. Then all of a sudden he was, you know, super sensitive, and he decided that that Humvee was a bad idea, that he had to be careful and have this environmental message. He just did this, like a public service thing, condemning, I think it was Trump, for environmental records. And yet, here's the 73-year-old cruising around in an Army Humvee to run errands in Santa Monica. So, you know, again, it's one of these things where you're driving a monster truck to go out there and grab a few goods from your local store, you know, and yet you're saying that the entire environment's, you know, being destroyed. Everybody's got to do more except for me. And that double standard, the thing is, it's not that double standards are all that unusual, but it always blows me away that they don't see them. I would be embarrassed to do it, but they're not somehow. It's just bizarre. David Bowes, in for Dory Monson, 97.3 Cairo FM.